This is Cinephile, episode 4, the Tour de France episode. Get on your bike and ride.
Get on your bike and ride. Get on your bike and ride. Get on your bike and ride.
Peek through the glass panel door, looked each other knowingly. We got a weirdo here. They were so freaked out, they took a shower together. The bathroom was incredibly small. Sliding door, toilet sink, curtain with shower, cocaine, stoned stout. Ask a guy, he said, can you drive like a man? Wrong thing to say to A and C, there's a shortcut. Car, Robin, Carol, hit pedal, and they burn. Rubber, baby, burn, rubber, baby. What a rush. Nuns at 20 miles an hour for ages and ages and ages. I'm thinking it was two women with the same haircuts. Lots of swearing, jokes, overtaking, realizing they were nuns. Sorry, our sisters. Saving the lamb, smartly dressed. Tiny lane, car comes up, meet head to head. Two men watch while A and C go up the hedge. She grabs the lamb by the head, tossed, tossed. Get on your bike ride. Go find some countryside where we can get much closer. Get off your bike a while. Go find a country style where we can get much higher. Higher to the birds that sing. The leaves that sway in higher with the one that's standing there. With you. I get off your bike a while. Go find some countryside. You can lay the blanket down. Rushing back to make it. Old friends been singing for years and years and years. Can't get the back end right. Can't get the back end right. Can't get the back end right. So we're gonna have to move.
That was Bike Ride by Scanlon. It is an absolutely glorious day here in my corner of Canada. The sky is blue and there isn't a cloud. But what might happen is, I can't hear anything yet. I've been trying to squeeze in the recording of today's podcast in between everybody mowing their lawns. It's late on a Friday afternoon and a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day, and everybody's trying to get that job out of the way before the weekend. So if you end up hearing some funny humming in the background, that will be my neighbor's lawnmowers. We have a new neighbor next door, and I swear it takes her like 3 hours to mow a lawn, much longer than it takes us, and we use a push mower. She's using a push mower. She's using a gas mower. Anyway, welcome to episode 4. Slowly but surely, I'm climbing up the podcast hill. I was going to do 2 films this week. And it's not that the other film doesn't inspire me, because that's not true. I was going to talk about the Triplet de Belleville, an animated feature that I really love. And I'm not a huge animation fan, but I really loved that one. Loved how it was dark and sinister and terribly funny all at the same time. But given the way the cycling year has gone, I just needed to focus on the one cycling film that both treats the things that have been bothering me with great humor, and that reminds me in the end of why I like this sport so much anyway. So today, one film, Le Vélo de Guylain Lambert, which I think got released in the Anglo world as Guylain Lambert's Bicycle. It's a film directed by Philippe Harel and was written by Harel, Benoit Poelvoorde, and Olivier Dessart, who I don't know if he's a cycling historian, but he has written a number of works on the history of cycling. And it stars Benoit Poelvoorde. Okay, it stars other people as well, but just give me a moment here, because I love Benoit Poelvoorde. I can't tell you when the moment was when I realized that I absolutely loved his work. I've seen every film but one, I've seen everything released to DVD but one. He's had a couple of films out this past year, so I'm waiting for those to come out. And I so regret not getting a copy of his one-man stage show. He's done one one-man stage show, and it was released very briefly to DVD. It was there 1 minute, and it was gone the next, and it's no longer available. And please, you know, my pain is so deep. Stop laughing. Stop it. Just stop it. I can tell you, when I saw this film, I knew it was going to be a kind of a breakthrough film, not only for Poelvoorde, but also for his co-star, José García. Because until this film, both of them, García in particular, they were clearly pegged as funny men, comics with a penchant for the physical, the absurd, the outrageous. And José García particularly, you only have to see his work with his straight man Antoine de Caunes, who, by the way, is the Antoine de Caunes is the narrator for this film, the Guylain Lambert's Bicycle, to see sort of the level of excess in comedy that he is capable of, although he's honestly toned it down a lot. And I heard him interviewed, and somebody asked why he was no longer, you know, sort of going mad in interviews. And he said, well, you know, everybody has to grow up sometime. Anyway, I think it's really deceptive to say that Benoit Poelvoorde is a physical comic, which is something I've heard, or that he's got an elastic face. He's definitely not a Belgian Jim Carrey. What he does have, however, is an extremely expressive face. And most particularly, he has a way of using his eyes to reveal what he's thinking at any given moment. It's actually really stunning. 1 minute he can be goofing around, and the next minute he pulls into a role, and the transformation is amazing. This was true, too, in the last film of his that I've got on DVD, Entre ses mains, In His Hands. One episode I'd really like to do would involve looking at a couple of films that Poulvard and Garcia are in together, maybe Le Boulet, and definitely this one, Le Velo de Guillaume Lambert, and then contrasting those earlier works with, say, Le Couperet, which stars Garcia, and Entre Ses Mains with Poulvard. Both of them were nominated for the Best Actor, César, last year in France for those respective films. And both of those films clearly took each of them off the comedy path. One problem with that, though, is that the Cooper is really easy to talk about, but Entre Ses Mains is not, because I would have to give away the ending of the film to do it. I've had a really good think about this, and I even talked it through with the tech guy. And he hasn't seen the film, but he said he didn't mind the spoiler. But there's absolutely no way to talk about Entre Ses Mains without completely giving it away. And I understand there's a complete irony in this, because today I'm telling you the whole story of the film. And it's hard not to talk about a film without doing that. But this is not a mystery or a thriller, and it won't, honestly, it won't ruin the film to tell you how it ends. But with Entre Ses Mains, if I tell you the ending, you know, you're not going to want to watch it, because there'll be no suspense. So one of the things I've thought about is maybe I would, I will do this one day. Entre Ses Mains is a great film. It was at the film festival last year, but so far as I know, I haven't seen a Canadian release. Was it released elsewhere? Will it be? If you see it, if you see it coming to a cinema near you, do try to go see it. Not only for Poulvard, but for his co-star, Isabelle Carré, who's an amazing, amazing young French actress. She's so talented. She was also nominated for her role in this film last year, too, for the Best Actress César. Anyway, here's the deal. If I ever do that episode, I'll warn you at the beginning, and I'll put disclaimers on the show page and at the beginning of the episode and whatever. I'd love to do that, but we'll see how it goes. Anyway, back to Le Velo de Guillaume Lambert. One reason I really adore this film is because it's a perfect small summary of everything that's good and bad in cycling. It doesn't pull any punches. There's doping, the importance of sponsors, and how sometimes the sponsors call the shots, no matter what the cost to the team. It's all in there. And if you know nothing about racing, or pro cycling in particular, it's a really, really excellent film to learn from. Hang on a sec, I gotta take a sip here. Sorry. One of the problems with having absolutely gorgeous weather is that it's dry and my allergies are set up, so I've got a nice hot lemon and honey here for my throat. What was I saying? A good film to learn from. Anyway, the scenes from the Tour de France, I think it's the 72 tour, I'm not sure. It's one of the tours in the 70s. That those scenes from the Tour de France, from the publicity caravans to the peloton to the radio tour, which is the official tour commentary, the crowds, the roadside, the voiture balai. A balai in French is literally a broom. So the voiture balai is a van that sweeps up the riders who abandon along a stage. They get loaded in their bike get loaded in the back of it and get, you know, taken to the end of the race, and they're out of the tour. But all of this gives you a really good idea of what goes on. Just as an aside, you know what job I would really, really love to do? The ardoisier. An ardoisier is a blackboard. And the ardoisier is the guy who sits on the back of one of the tour motorcycles and holds up a blackboard to tell the front rider or riders how far back the followers are. Can you imagine spending the month of July doing that job? I mean, even if you do have to wear a dorky yellow suit and helmet, wouldn't that just be great? Anyway, Guillaume Lambert is a petit coureur, a domestique, a porteur d'eau, or a water carrier. In other words, he's not a star. He's not even a leader, but he dreams of it. He dreams of one day beating the great Eddy Merckx, of whom he is a contemporary, and actually plots to beat Merckx's world record time set in Mexico in the 70s, early 70s. But no matter how big his dreams, Guillain just doesn't have the legs to take him to the top. The spirit's willing. But Guillain has bad luck to boot, and he's constantly accident-prone, and he spends as much time off the bike, or falling off his bike, as he does staying on it. He joins the Pro Tour when he's discovered riding the roads in Belgium by Monsieur Focodel, who's the directeur sportif of the team sponsored by Magicrem, which is a cleaning product. He's taken under wing by Ricardo Fortuna, the aptly named Ricardo Fortuna, who's an Italian who tries to show him the ropes and to explain to him the role of the domestique, the guys who support the leader, the guys who do everything to make sure the leader ends up the winner. And those scenes in the film are great. They actually show what's involved in doing this in a race in a way that's more obvious than in real life. If you don't understand, team cycling, it's a good learning experience. And at first, Guillain does what's required of him. But eventually, he wants more. He's convinced that he could be better than Fabrice, Magicrem's designated leader. And he ends up going the doping route to try to improve his performance. As an aside, in order to come to terms with recent events in the pro cycling world, I've been trying to do a little research. And one of the interesting facts I turned up is that studies have shown that for the most part, if doping occurs in cycling, it generally doesn't occur amongst the top riders. Usually, it happens in the next level down. The guys who don't have quite what it takes to be on top, but who really want to get there and are desperate to try anything. Of course, that doesn't explain the Puerto affair, the current Spanish doping scandal, and the testosterone results from a certain Tour de France cyclist, which combined have succeeded in removing the top five or six riders from the game. But it's a fact that comes out really well in this movie. Guillain is good, but he's just not good enough. I'm actually glad that the film doesn't gloss over the doping, and it also deals with it with a good dose of humor. In one of the funniest scenes in the film, Guillain ends up injected with a dose designed to be shared between two riders, and he's clearly wired for sound as he signs in for the race. The starter goes off, and for a moment, all you see is Guillain as he zips by, already ahead of the pack. And that's how it goes for much of the race. As you see him, you know, cycling frenetically, until all at once, the effect begins to wear off. And he just blows himself out, falling off the bike into the grassy verge at the side of the road. After that, they get the doses adjusted, and he rigs up a bit of a system to get around the tests on those occasions when he ends up on a podium. Until the fateful day when the doctor supervising the control insists that he pee into the cup right under his watchful eye. Which, in turn, ends his career with Magicrem. Because doping is tolerated as long as one gets away with it. But if you're caught, you're off the team. Guillain takes it rather hard, because it's clear he thinks that if they weren't exactly encouraging him to do it, but they weren't discouraging him from doing it. But in any case, if you know, that's the team should share in the blame. And I think that's an interesting and an important message. That's actually one of the big, here's my little rant for the day. This is one of the big problems I have with these doping scandals. It's not that I think the riders shouldn't be sanctioned. They should. But it's also really easy to forget that these guys are part of a whole network that places incredible pressure on them to perform and to succeed and to make sure that the financial investment of the sponsors is protected. But when they're caught, they're the ones hung out to dry. And no one else takes any responsibility for it, and then it happens again and again. As I said, that's my small rant for the day. If you want to clean up cycling, you've got to deal with the riders, but you've also got to deal with this whole network of enablers. Guy Lanthol ends up out of work, depressed, disillusioned, to the point that he actually goes out, he digs a great pit and buries his bicycle in it. Eventually, his brother Claude, played by José García, takes the reins, becomes his manager, gets him back cycling, and eventually he gets hired by another team, also managed by Monsieur Foucaudel, and finds himself on the Tour de France, where, true to form, he performs miserably. He's sick, and there's some concern that he's going to arrive hors délai. The delay is the amount of time after the arrival of the winner of the stage that a rider is permitted to arrive in, and it can be a complicated calculation depending on the stage, the difficulty, the length. But any rider who arrives hors délai, outside the permitted time, is automatically removed from the tour and is not permitted to start the next day. So this first day, Guilin just manages to arrive in time, but he's sick, he's exhausted, he's delirious. And by chance, there's a camera crew that comes to, they want to do some background stuff on teams and what the race was like and this and that. And the reporter is intrigued by Guilin and ends up doing a piece on him, which of course means 10 minutes of airtime, which thrills the bejeebers out of the sponsor. Which of course means that in an amazing tour de farce, instead of supporting their leader, Freddy, the whole team is ordered to make sure that Guilin arrives just in time. Day after day after day, with more and more journalists joining in to follow Guilin's trials. And to the point that without any team support, the leader Freddy himself fails to arrive. And he ends up, being picked up by the voiture ballet, and he ends up off the tour. The sponsor demands that Guilin stage a dramatic fall in front of a monument in a particularly grueling mountain stage. And Guilin is promised a good reward if he does it. There's a series, a whole bunch of prime they're called, that guys get for, doing their job. And, there are prime for winning a stage and for winning sprints in the stage. And, so there is this whole system of little rewards that goes on. That's one of the things in cycling. So Guilin is promised this reward if he does what the sponsor wants. True to form, though, Guilin does things his way, making a glorious arrival at the summit and sailing by the monument, but eventually throwing himself off a cliff on a lonely, foggy stretch of road, and effectively ends his cycling career. The little rider, the water carrier, the guy who chafed under team's orders, ultimately ends his career by defying team orders. And after that, Guilin's life ends up kind of small and bitter, and he fades from the limelight. But it's obvious he never loses his love for the sport. In the final scene, he's at his stand at the local brocante. What do you call brocante? Not exactly flea market, but not exactly antiques, but, a dealer in collectibles and bric-a-brac and those kinds of things. And he's at his stand, and he's reading a cycling magazine, and the very young rider in the article he's reading about shows up to buy a handful of petits coureurs. He's got little models of bike racers that he's put up for sale. Another aside, this is the only scene where you see these figurines because all the earlier scenes with them were edited out. They involved Guilin as a young boy playing with them and then scattering them on the floor as he tears his room apart after being thrown off the team. The film doesn't suffer for the loss of the scenes, but it is interesting to see them, in the outtakes on the DVD. He bags up the figurines and the cyclist leaves the stand, and then as an afterthought, Guilin runs after him and asks him to autograph the article he's been reading. En mémoire des petits coureurs is what he signs, in memory of the little guys. Which is, of course, not only a fitting summary of the film, but also a perfect summary of what I love about cycling. Sure, it's exciting seeing the talented leaders, But what makes a leader is the little guys who help him get there. The ones who've loved the sport since they were kids, who love it even after it chews them up and spits them out. And it's because of them that I'll continue to watch cycling and love it. Is this the time to confess that I haven't actually been on a bike since last fall? Since I had that fall in January, I have to say I'm actually terrified of getting on a bike. I'm so plots that if I fall again, I may never get up. But equally, the thought that I may never get on a bike again fills me with, you know, a lot of pain. Well, not pain, but I'm not happy about the idea. Because, you know, if I could pick one thing to accomplish, one really big thing, the thing I would love to do is ride one of those mythic stages of the Tour de France, maybe Gap to Alpe d'Huez. Of course, not at the pace of a tour rider, but a lot more leisurely. Although I did say to the tech guy I'd have to walk the bike up partway, I think. Of course, time itself is racing along, as time will, and I'm getting older and a little more fragile, and I'm concerned I'll never get the chance to try it. But just to feel for a brief moment what those riders feel, the pain, the suffering, and ultimately the joy. One of my absolute favorite writers is Philippe Delerme. He's known particularly for writing small pieces, snapshots, and is able to capture the essence of things perfectly. In a lot of ways, Sage at the Quirky Nomads podcast does the same thing. Almost by accident, I stumbled across a piece of his entitled Le Tour de France, and happily he reminds me about what I love about it all. Delerme says that the Tour is summer. It's a July that never ends, and sitting down to watch the Tour on television in July, something that seems so unthinkable when the weather is beautiful, is a respectable ritual that allows us to escape from the usual summer state of far niente, doing nothing. But it's also more than that, he suggests. You just don't watch a tour. You watch the tours, because each peloton carries with it the trace of pelotons of previous years. More than that, the Tour allows you to see the French countryside in all its glory, and to see its people reveling in the festivity that accompanies the Tour's arrival, allows each individual viewer to connect with all of France in its summer splendor. He ends the piece with this glorious sentence, "Sur l'écran du téléviseur, les étés se ressemblent, et les attaques les plus vives en goût de menthe à l'eau." On the television screen, all summers look alike, and the most lively attacks have a taste of mint-scented water. My translation does it no justice. Delerme's writing is exquisite, and he captures my love of the Tour with perfection. So, that was episode 4. I'm still looking for contributions for the comfort film episode, so if that is something you'd like to do, head over to the show page, www.cinephile.org. You can leave a contribution in the comments to each episode, or look over on the sidebar to find my email address and the link to Odeo, where you can leave me a 3-minute audio message. Oh, almost forgot. I have a message for Graham. Graham, send me the Dink dolls. Send them to me. Don't make me beg, Graham. It wouldn't be pretty. Just send me the dolls. Oh, dear. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Graham knows what I'm talking about. That's all that counts. Graham knows what I'm talking about. I'm going to close now and leave you with a piece that reminds me happily of what I love about cycling, the flow of the peloton, riders in a group heading out into the countryside, and lots of attacks and breakaways, little things to make it all interesting. It's called Flovolescence. It's by Dave of the Chub Creek podcast, www.daveisadink.com. Oh, no, that's not really the URL. But he can't seem to get mine straight, so I couldn't resist. Mind you, I know the chances of him listening to this are pretty much slim to nil. He listened to the last episode, by the way, but only after I nagged him excessively. And then what he said was, "You have a very soothing voice. This would be good to listen to at bedtime." Which, of course, you know, is Canuck speak for, if ever I have a night when I can't sleep, I'm going to listen to your podcast and drift right off. And see how nice I am? Even after that, I'm going to play this piece of music. Ciao for now. See you in episode 5. Here's Dave with Flovalescence.